Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's meeting. I'm Fernando, your host, Alcoholic. Let's go ahead and open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, we have a little quick story here. It's called The Changing of One Small Heart. Says, Mom, can you take me and Andy to the tennis courts on the way to school tonight? Mom, can you drop me off at Scott's? It's on the way to the courts. Mom, can Jason spend the night since the other boys won't be home? You could pick him up on the way home from school. Mom, are you taking the car tonight? I would really like to trade cars because your tires have air and mine don't. And I'm driving a lot further than you are tonight. Honey, you're out of milk. Could you stop on the way from school and pick up a gallon? This is my world today. I have a typical family of four children from my three different marriages. I am miraculously participating in a 10-year-long marriage to a man who used to drop his trousers in bars and sleep in his car. 7 years ago, we were headed for disaster with a life that was literally with alcohol and drug abuse, child and spouse abuse, police intervention, general chaos. I hated myself, everyone who was within a relationship distance. I couldn't hold on a job and live on welfare. Today, it would be hard to pick us out from the other families on our suburban street. Today, I teach at a local library at art college, and I'm close to finish up a PhD in psychology. My family is a miracle to me. The world is a nasty place for a woman who destroyed everything she touches. Parenthood was simply an excuse to continue breathing. How lonely the dark nights and early mornings could be when they were spent with drunken strangers who told lies bigger than my own. I lived this life. I sought out this life. It was safe because I felt comfortable in a world that demanded little more than drunken participation. Approaching 30 years of age, I knew the dance of the living dead. God, in infinite wisdom, decided I needed a taste of something fine and real and unconditional accepting to bring meaning to my life. I met Hope face to face in an AA hall. I believe that heaven and earth stopped for a moment and observed the changing of one small heart. I found a moment of peace in an otherwise unmanageable life, and I cried out for help. I found my help at regular AA meetings, and by diligently seeking my higher power via the 12 steps explained to me by patient AA members and a very tolerant sponsor. It has not been easy, and it has not been begonias bundled with ribbons. I remember the changes I tried to make in the beginning and how hard they were. The substance abuse was the first change to be made, followed by changes in relationship behavior and perceptions of the world. I remember one particularly difficult segment of time, a day. Anxiety and depression covered me in a blanket of steel. My sponsor said to keep busy, to achieve small tasks, and to enjoy each breath I took. I decided to move a stack of wood that day from the driveway into the garage where it would stay dry and be easier to get at. It was late winter, and a swirl of snowflakes swept over the icy drive. I welcomed the cold. It was a feeling of vibrant feeling and held me above the drudgery of depression. I wrapped up warm and forcefully began moving the pile of wood as if it would somehow change my life. I started carrying three or four pieces at a time, scraping my hands and my neck carrying the load too high. I rushed, I hurried, I was desperate. The task seemed insurmountable. The wood was heavy and eventually I was forced to carry only a piece at a time. I had to stop and rest when I got tired. It was hard work for a small woman. I wanted to quit, but I did it. I began to see that somehow I could do it. I prayed to the Almighty, and my spirits were bolstered. I breathe slowly and intently and focus on the task at hand. My thoughts wandered, but they quit racing. Piece by piece, moment by moment, the pile inside the garage grew higher and higher. This job could be done. It will be done. I could see the finished product taking shape, and I was beginning to feel good about myself. My arms ached, but there was joy in this pain. Then I found that toward the bottom of the heap, the pieces of rough wood were frozen together. I struggled. I kicked at the pieces and scraped them with my gloves. I got some of the pieces, but a few on the very bottom were immovable. How could this be? I was giving it all I had. I was outraged. I was sinking. Tears came fast and furious, leaving raw spots on my cheeks where I rubbed at them with my gloves. I sank into a heap on the cold driveway. I was cold and tired. I couldn't do it anymore. I turned my head around to see my husband walking toward me in his robe and slippers. He had a fireplace poker in his hand and began chipping away at the ice. His blue robe was not protecting him from the wind, and he looked pretty comical. He moved the last few pieces of wood into the garage and then turned and gathered me in his arms. "You don't have to do it all by yourself," he whispered. "I didn't know that," I sobbed back. He went back into the house. I got an old broom and swept away the pieces of remaining bark which littered the driveway. The wind gathered loose scraps and took them away. Some pieces just swirled around me, and I decided to leave them swirling. A few shards were sunk in ice and would have to wait for a warmer day. I went into the house for a cup of hot cocoa and to snuggle into a pair of slippers. That's how my pile of wood moved from the driveway to the garage, and it's the same way that I have watched miracles happen in my sobriety. Miracles of love, miracles around me, and life which daily astound me. I work hard to do what is in front of me to do, asking for the guidance of my higher power and help from others when necessary. I feel pain and I feel pleasure. I know joy and heartache. I am alive and I am a sober human being. Thanks to my higher power and the fellowship of AA, I certainly am. Carla D. from Parksville, Montana. This was October 1992, Grapevine. All right. The Changing of One Small Heart is the name of the title of the article. And that's from our beloved Grapevine. I told you before, I have a neon sign that says, "Expect a miracle." And it's funny, a lot of people say, "Don't expect anything," or something in that nature. But I was in a meeting, a Midtown meeting, in beautiful downtown Stockton, California. And they had a sign, a cardboard sign, that must have been up on the wall, I estimated, at least 20 years. Once they decided to paint the place, they took the cardboard sign off and left the beautiful, bright color of the original paint in the wall. And you know what it said? It said, "Expect a miracle." So while the guy was sharing, or the secretary was announcing, people would look up to the left and see that cardboard inscription. It was pretty big. It was at least by 1.5 by 1.5 and written in the marker. "Expect a miracle." Everybody loved it so much, they left it up there for years and years. You know why? That's why. I walked out the bathroom this morning and I looked up and there's the sign again. But this time I have a neon sign. It's a restaurant sign. You can turn it on and it lights up. It's "Expect a miracle." And then my mind, it actually hits 90% of my mind. My subconscious mind starts thinking about that, starts trying how it can bring scenarios of miracles about. So I'm actually hypnotizing myself with that. Expect a miracle. A miracle only happens in God's category, in God's heaven. That's God's division. That's his division. It's out of my division. I have nothing to do with that. All I do is I put in the request. Every day I come out of the restroom, expect a miracle, expect a miracle. I start thinking in terms of miracles. How about that? I got that in an AA program, folks. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, let's go. Mary Friend B from Morrison, New Jersey sends us a letter. She says, in the same year, October 1992, my family was a large one, full of many aunts, uncles, and cousins, making holidays and celebrations large and festive. However, there was a big blow-up over something trivial, and suddenly it all fell apart. The death of my grandfather was the first time the family would all be together in one room since the blow-up. In anticipation of the emotional outburst I knew would occur, I got drunk before the funeral. I rationalized that my grandfather would want me to be that way for his funeral. We had so much in common. My grandfather died drunk. The death of my grandmother came a year and a half later. We were all brought back together again in the same funeral parlor. Once again, animosity filled the air. And once again, I was in my typical frame of mind, stewing, smelling. To deal with the circumstances, the scenario was similar to the Hatfields and the McCoys. All this time, I tried to be the glue that would keep the family together. In the meantime, getting ripped apart myself. This went on for years. It continued into my recovery. When I got sober, I put getting the family back together on the top of my things to do list. It is just recently, in fact, in the last few days, that I have decided this no longer belongs on my list. If God, as I understand him, can fix my family, I certainly can't either. It hurts unmercifully to see resentment fester in such a huge family with no two members talking to each other. But the beauty of it that I have removed myself from the pain, I have gotten great relief from our two AA slogans, live and let live and let go and let God. I no longer feel responsible. This is a huge burden lifted from my shoulders. My recovery can now take another turn. I love each and every member of my family dearly, but I accept that we all can't be in the same place at the same time, at least not for today. I believe I have now decided to let all of AA's into my life. So many times I have heard people say that AA became their family, and I couldn't identify with that. I have been active in service all of this time, but there was still that small emptiness that would appear now and then. I think I have found what that was. I needed to let all of AA's into my life, the young people, the bleeding deacons, the elder statements, and most importantly, the newcomer. They are always there to listen and to tell me what I need to hear and not what I want to hear. Without their help, I wouldn't be where I am today to share another one of those promises which has come true for me. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Thanks to my AA family, Mary Fran B., Morriston, New Jersey. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Pretty cool, huh? You know, I was thinking about my family, Fernando Alcoholic, and when my mom passed away, Hatfields and McCoys. But, you know, emotions run. But because I've been in AA for a while, we were able to sing songs as she was passing away, me and the wife. We just sat there and we kind of ushered the family into singing with us and bringing an atmosphere of celebration and praise and worship as she passed away 2-3 in the morning. Bless my mama. Hallelujah. And today we had to eat crow, me and the younger sister. I just keep thanking God for them. Keep thanking you, God, for years and years. And finally, it broke. Finally, the dam busted and the love came, the forgiveness and the hugs. Today, it seems like we never went through it. Everybody's happy and loving and kind. And we all know what to do. We all know what to do. To forgive and embrace. That's what we do. I'm not telling you what to do, but eating crow is just real quick. It's like taking medicine. A little bit of sugar, it makes it go down. Oh, check this out. Our next story, or one of the stories, is called A Blanket of Forgiveness. This is by Rick B. from Minneapolis, Minnesota. A Blanket of Forgiveness. Minneapolis. I know, I'm a foreigner. All right, let's go ahead and get the story going. You gotta excuse the thunder in the background. It's trash day. It'll never come back. Upon entering AA at the ripe old age of 35, having lost my family, my business, and my home, I knew I had to resolve my conflicts or go mad. I realized I would find no peace in this program unless I was willing to change, so I set out to do a fourth step. I used the inventory on pages 64 and 65 of the big book, with amazing results. Whenever I've been willing to be honest about my past experiences, I have been able to see that I set the ball rolling on every one. It wasn't hard to stay angry when I found I was about 95% responsible for the problems. And I could see this when I wrote them out and let them go. With the exception of one, my problems with my father, it is the experience I would like to share. I am the youngest of five children. My father was an active alcoholic all through my early childhood. He sobered up in AA when I was 11 and never drank again. My mother, also an alcoholic but better able at this time to maintain her drinking, divorced my father. She never got involved in either Al-Anon or AA and went on to marry another alcoholic. She committed suicide on my 15th birthday. During these years, I was raised mostly by my older sister. Without much discipline in my life, not only was I in trouble a great deal of the time in school, but also with the law. Back in those years, most people felt sorry for me because of my family situation, and I used that fact to every advantage I could. I now see how I blame my father for everything that happened in my family. I blame him for my mother's death and for every problem I had. He was a scapegoat for everyone in the family. Society reinforced this fact, so it was easy to stay angry at him. I saw him as guilty of doing something to me, and I couldn't seem to forgive him. At that time, I couldn't see how I was imprisoning myself with this mindset. Still working on my fourth step with no luck resolving this issue, I decided to stop looking at my relationship with my father and to explore the anger toward my own family situation. I have two children, and I was angry with their mother because our relationship had failed. As I began looking with honesty as my part in what had happened, I realized that I had done exactly the same thing to my family that my father had done to his. What I did with no malice or intent to harm anyone. My wife and I were fighting each other on every issue and at every level. I left my wife alone to raise the children as I was trying to clean up the financial disaster I had created and continue to create daily. I was losing my business and my properties, continue to rob Peter to pay Paul. My home was already gone, and I was losing my ability to control my emotions. I know beyond any doubt, I was doing the absolute best that I could do at that time. I'm sure our families and friends must have thought that I didn't care about my family. This definitely was not the case. I loved them very much, but my whole life was falling apart. I abandoned my family, not understanding the impact of what I was doing. My thoughts was, at least my children have one parent looking after them. When I saw all this, I realized that my father's situation was no different from mine. My father was an alcoholic, operating and living in insanity just as I was. When I became aware of this fact, I immediately saw him in a different light. I understood his position rather than only mine. I had gone for 30 years of my life trying to get people to understand me. And here was a different formula. If I could understand others, I could release myself from resentment and truly forgive what had occurred. Out of this new perspective, I no longer saw my father as guilty of doing anything to me. My resentment dissolved, never to return. After this experience, I was able to sit down and write my father a letter from a new and clear reality. I told him how proud of him I was for his staying sober, and I hope I could follow his example of recovery. Today, I have a great relationship with this man. We go to meetings together when he is in town. A wonderful healing has taken place in our lives. There has been other healings in my recovery. Like a blanket of forgiveness spread over my life, I am able to see many other situations more clearly. I am beginning to come to peace within myself through forgiving others. I owe all this to AA. A friend asked me a couple of years ago if I had any guilt about what happened in my family. My answer is no. I was doing the best I knew how with what I had to work with. I believe the reason is simple. When I left my father off the hook, I let myself off the hook at the same time. By what measure I judge others, I judge myself. By what measures I forgive others, I forgive myself. Una más, por favor, I will tell the bartender. One more, please. This story is called An Eve Toward Conversation. Excuse me, conservation. An eye toward conservation. This is by Ernie S. from York, M.E. Okay, with the national economy in decline, I am looking and listening more carefully to some of the requests for financial responsibility coming from the AA service boards. Escalating rent, printing, mailing, and transportation costs, rising taxes, and increased use of services are reasons cited by the AA program to sanction requests for more money. This comes at a time when most wages are frozen, the value of money is declining, and many people are without income altogether. During business meetings and discussions of our seven tradition, I heard members propose $2 donations and suggest that the well-heeled among us might come up with a 5 or 10, maybe even write a check now and then. Anonymously, of course, to balance the books. The message is always single track. AA needs more money to carry the message. In other words, we don't have enough. We need more. Never have I heard anyone suggest that AA need to evaluate the ways it is spending the voluntary contributions of its members with an eye toward conserving this limited resource. Alcoholics seem able to conceive of ever more grandiose ways to carry the message to every corner of the world with these schemes predicated on other people in the membership, picking up the tab. This strikes a clear resonance with the rehab of a bunch of AAs once opened in Middletown that we read about in Tradition 4. One of the lessons of that chapter of AA history was that too many drunks were focused entirely on sobering up other drunks and ignore proper care of their own sobriety. The intentions were good, but the means were not suited to people addicted to ego-feeding propositions. An after-the-fact request from our group's GSR to repay his expenses for attending the Northeast Regional Forum brought the question sharply into focus for my group. Of the 212, it cost him to attend the 2.5-day conference. Of 150 went to the hotel hosting the event. It took our group 8 to 10 weeks to raise that amount of money from our contributions, and ours is one of the better off meetings in one of the country's poorest states. So we have to seriously question whose sobriety is served by our paying $150 to a hotel. As a rule, we would be donating portions of that money to the local phone service, the state central office service, the district, and GSO in New York. Our group's limited funds force us to make a choice. Where do we put our money? Returning from the large regional events staged by upper-level service boards, sober AAs carry a visible glow, acquiring in contact with other hopeful, far-sighted, sober people like themselves. But I have yet to hear a report about one of those events that has changed the way a meeting operates or that has done anything for a newcomer other than create more confusion for him or her. Even when we can't meet our rent on time, the AA message is carried at the local meetings from one alcoholic to another, not through regional conferences, state conventions, national gatherings, not through projects enabling overseas populations to develop programs that are supposed to be self-supporting, and certainly not through renting rooms from hotel chains to ensure the comfort of our trusted servants. All those big events do contribute to carry the message of AA, but with the present squeeze for funding getting tighter, I will vote every time for keeping the money at home, in the local group, and the state central service office, where the resources is conserved and meted out in small, concrete, countable ways. My vote goes to local use, where one alcoholic can shake the hand of another, sit down and share experience, strength, and hope. That's what I call putting money where my mouth is. Ha ha ha. Ernie S. from York, Minnesota, or Montana, or Menifee. I don't know. Ernie S. York. Thank you so much, Ernie. Now, the AA Grapevine, founded in 1944, is the International Monthly Journal of Alcoholics Anonymous and published the individual experiences, strength, and hope of AA members and others interested in the AA fellowship. Widely known as a meeting in print, the Grapevine communicates the thoughts and feelings of its contributors and reflects current AA experience with recovery, unity, and service. Articles are not intended as statements of AA policy, nor does publication imply any endorsement by either AA or the Grapevine. The Grapevine is self-supporting through subscriptions and other sales incomes and does not accept group contributions. What? Articles are invited, although no payment can be made, nor can material be returned. I think it's aagrapevine.org. It's easy to find. Anyway, it would behoove us to get our subscription going again or give out subscriptions to people we know will enjoy them. I'd like to get the Spanish Viña so I can give it to my Spanish people. I used to have it as people would ask me. I said, what do you want for Christmas? I want an AA Grapevine subscription, please. Oh, they'd be so happy. You know, they don't have to dish out $150 like their present. Or the Viña, and I would get it. People, well, I'll give you both. Isn't that awesome? They haven't asked me for a present lately. I got to grow up. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to me to read today from the October 1992 Grapevine. The Family Afterwards is the article. I love you. God bless you. No one told you they love you. I love you and I care. Let's pray the Our Father, please. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back, family. It's definitely working. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's meeting. I'm Fernando, your host, Alcoholic. Let's go ahead and open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, we have a little quick story here. It's called The Changing of One Small Heart. It says, Mom, can you take me and Andy to the tennis courts on the way to school tonight? Mom, can you drop me off at Scott's? It's on the way to the courts. Mom, can Jason spend the night since the other boys won't be home? You could pick him up on the way home from school. Mom, are you taking the car tonight? I would really like to trade cars because your tires have air and mine don't. And I'm driving a lot further than you are tonight. Honey, you're out of milk. Could you stop on the way from school and pick up a gallon? This is my world today. I have a typical family of four children from my three different marriages. I am miraculously participating in a 10-year-long marriage to a man who used to drop his trousers at bars and sleep in his car. 7 years ago, we were headed for disaster with a life that was literally with alcohol and drug abuse, child and spouse abuse, police intervention, general chaos. I hated myself, everyone who was within a relationship distance. I couldn't hold on a job and live on welfare. Today, it would be hard to pick us out from the other families on our suburban street. Today, I teach at a local library at art college, and I'm close to finish up a PhD in psychology. My family is a miracle to me. The world is a nasty place for a woman who destroyed everything she touches. Parenthood was simply an excuse to continue breathing. How lonely the dark nights and early mornings could be when they were spent with drunken strangers who told lies bigger than my own. I lived this life. I sought out this life. It was safe because I felt comfortable in a world that demanded little more than drunken participation. Approaching 30 years of age, I knew the dance of the living dead. God, in infinite wisdom, decided I needed a taste of something fine and real and unconditional accepting to bring meaning to my life. I met hope face to face in an AA hall. I believe that heaven and earth stopped for a moment and observed the changing of one small heart. I found a moment of peace in an otherwise unmanageable life, and I cried out for help. I found my help at regular AA meetings, and by diligently seeking my higher power via the 12 steps explained to me by patient AA members and a very tolerant sponsor. It has not been easy, and it has not been begonias bundled with ribbons. I remember the changes I tried to make in the beginning and how hard they were. The substance abuse was the first change to be made, followed by changes in relationship behavior and perceptions of the world. I remember one particularly difficult segment of time, a day. Anxiety and depression covered me in a blanket of steel. My sponsor said to keep busy, to achieve small tasks, and to enjoy each breath I took. I decided to move a stack of wood that day from the driveway into the garage where it will stay dry and be easier to get at. It was late winter, and a swirl of snowflakes swept over the icy drive. I welcomed the cold. It was a feeling of vibrant feeling and held me above the drudgery of depression. I wrapped up warm and forcefully began moving the pile of wood as if it would somehow change my life. I started carrying three or four pieces at a time, scraping my hands and my neck carrying the load too high. I rushed, I hurried, I was desperate. The task seemed insurmountable. The wood was heavy and eventually I was forced to carry only a piece at a time. I had to stop and rest when I got tired. It was hard work for a small woman. I wanted to quit, but I didn't. I began to see that somehow I could do it. I pray to the Almighty, and my spirits were bolstered. I breathe slowly and intently and focus on the task at hand. My thoughts wandered, but they quit racing. Piece by piece, moment by moment, and the pile inside the garage grew higher and higher. This job could be done. It will be done. I could see the finished product taking shape, and I was beginning to feel good about myself. My arms ached, but there was joy in this pain. Then I found that toward the bottom of the heap, the pieces of rough wood were frozen together. I struggled. I kicked at the pieces and scraped them with my gloves. I got some of the pieces, but a few on the very bottom were immovable. How could this be? I was giving it all I had. I was outraged. I was sinking. Tears came fast and furious, leaving raw spots on my cheeks where I rubbed at them with my gloves. I sank into a heap on the cold driveway. I was cold and tired. I couldn't do it anymore. I turned my head around to see my husband walking toward me in his robe and slippers. He had a fireplace poker in his hand and began chipping away at the ice. His blue robe was not protecting him from the wind, and he looked pretty comical. He moved the last few pieces of wood into the garage and then turned and gathered me in his arms. "You don't have to do it all by yourself," he whispered. "I didn't know that," I sobbed back. He went back into the house. I got an old broom and swept away the pieces of remaining bark which littered the driveway. The wind gathered loose scraps and took them away. Some pieces just swirled around me, and I decided to leave them swirling. A few shards were sunk in ice and would have to wait for a warmer day. I went into the house for a cup of hot cocoa and to snuggle into a pair of slippers. That's how my pile of wood moved from the driveway to the garage, and it's the same way that I have watched miracles happen in my sobriety. Miracles of love, miracles around me, and life which daily astound me. I work hard to do what is in front of me to do, asking for the guidance of my higher power and help from others when necessary. I feel pain and I feel pleasure. I know joy and heartache. I am alive and I am a sober human being. Thanks to my higher power and the fellowship of AA, I certainly am. Carla D. from Parksville, Montana. This was October 1992, Grapevine. All right. The Changing of One Small Heart is the name of the title of the article, and that's from our beloved Grapevine. I told you before, I have a neon sign that says, "Expect a miracle." And it's funny, a lot of people say, "Don't expect anything," or something in that nature. But I was in a meeting, a Midtown meeting, in beautiful downtown Stockton, California. And they had a sign, a cardboard sign, that must have been up on the wall, I estimated, at least 20 years. Once they decided to paint the place, they took the cardboard sign off. It left the beautiful, bright color of the original paint in the wall. And you know what it said? It said, "Expect a miracle." So while the guy was sharing, or the secretary was announcing, people would look up to the left and see that cardboard inscription. It was pretty big. It was at least by 1.5 by 1.5 and written in the marker. "Expect a miracle." Everybody loved it so much, they left it up there for years and years. You know why? That's why. I walked out the bathroom this morning and I looked up and there's the sign again. But this time I have a neon sign. It's a restaurant sign. You can turn it on and it lights up. It's "Expect a Miracle." And then my mind, it actually hits 90% of my mind. My subconscious mind starts thinking about that, starts trying how it can bring scenarios of miracles about. So I'm actually hypnotizing myself with that. Expect a miracle. A miracle only happens in God's category, in God's heaven. That's God's division. That's His division. It's out of my division. I have nothing to do with that. All I do is I put in the request. Every day I come out of the restroom, expect a miracle, expect a miracle. I start thinking in terms of miracles. How about that? I got that in an AA program, folks. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, let's go. Mary Friend B from Morrison, New Jersey sends us a letter. She says, in the same year, October 1992, my family was a large one, full of many aunts, uncles, and cousins, making holidays and celebrations large and festive. However, there was a big blow-up over something trivial, and suddenly it all fell apart. The death of my grandfather was the first time the family would all be together in one room since the blow-up. In anticipation of the emotional outburst I knew would occur, I got drunk before the funeral. I rationalized that my grandfather would want me to be that way for his funeral. We had so much in common. My grandfather died drunk. The death of my grandmother came a year and a half later. We were all brought back together again in the same funeral parlor. Once again, animosity filled the air. And once again, I was in my typical frame of mind, stewing. To deal with the circumstances, the scenario was similar to the Hatfields and the McCoys. All this time, I tried to be the glue that would keep the family together. In the meantime, getting ripped apart myself. This went on for years. It continued into my recovery. When I got sober, I put getting the family back together on the top of my things to do list. It is just recently, in fact, in the last few days, that I have decided this no longer belongs on my list. If God, as I understand Him, can fix my family, I certainly can't either. It hurts unmercifully to see resentment fester in such a huge family, with no two members talking to each other. But the beauty of it, that I have removed myself from the pain, I have gotten great relief from our two AA slogans, live and let live, and let go and let God. I no longer feel responsible. This is a huge burden lifted from my shoulders. My recovery can now take another turn. I love each and every member of my family dearly, but I accept that we all can't be in the same place at the same time, at least not for today. I believe I have now decided to let all of AA's into my life. So many times I have heard people say that AA became their family, and I couldn't identify with that. I have been active in service all of this time, but there was still that small emptiness that would appear now and then. I think I have found what that was. I needed to let all of AA's into my life, the young people, the bleeding deacons, the elder statements, and most importantly, the newcomer. They are always there to listen and to tell me what I need to hear and not what I want to hear. Without their help, I wouldn't be where I am today to share another one of those promises which has come true for me. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Thanks to my AA family, Mary Fran B., Morrison, New Jersey. Thank you. Pretty cool, huh? You know, I was thinking about my family, Fernando Alcoholic, and when my mom passed away, Hatfields and McCoys. But, you know, emotions run. But because I've been in AA for a while, we were able to sing songs as she was passing away, me and the wife. We just sat there and we kind of ushered the family into singing with us and bringing an atmosphere of celebration and praise and worship as she passed away 2-3 in the morning. Bless my mama. Hallelujah. And today we had to eat crow, me and the younger sister. I just keep thanking God for them. Keep thanking you, God, for years and years. And finally, it broke. Finally, the dam busted and the love came, the forgiveness and the hugs. Today, it seems like we never went through it. Everybody's happy and loving and kind. And we all know what to do. We all know what to do. To forgive and embrace. That's what we do. I'm not telling you what to do, but eating crow is just real quick. It's like taking medicine. A little bit of sugar, it makes it go down. Oh, check this out. Our next story, or one of the stories, is called A Blanket of Forgiveness. This is by Rick B. from Minneapolis, Minnesota. A Blanket of Forgiveness. Minneapolis. I know, I'm a foreigner. All right, let's go ahead and get the story going. You gotta excuse the thunder in the background. It's trash day. He'll never come back. Upon entering AA at the ripe old age of 35, having lost my family, my business, and my home, I knew I had to resolve my conflicts or go mad. I realized I would find no peace in this program unless I was willing to change. So I set out to do a fourth step. I used the inventory on pages 64 and 65 of the big book, with amazing results. Whenever I've been willing to be honest about my past experiences, I have been able to see that I set the ball rolling on everyone. It wasn't hard to stay angry when I found I was about 95% responsible for the problems. And I could see this when I wrote them out and let them go. With the exception of one, my problems with my father, it is the experience I would like to share. I am the youngest of five children. My father was an active alcoholic all through my early childhood. He sobered up in AA when I was 11 and never drank again. My mother, also an alcoholic, but better able at this time to maintain her drinking, divorced my father. She never got involved in either Al-Anon or AA and went on to marry another alcoholic. She committed suicide on my 15th birthday. During these years, I was raised mostly by my older sister. Without much discipline in my life, not only was I in trouble a great deal of the time in school, but also with the law. Back in those years, most people felt sorry for me because of my family situation, and I used that fact to every advantage I could. I now see how I blame my father for everything that happened in my family. I blame him for my mother's death and for every problem I had. He was a scapegoat for everyone in the family. Society reinforced this fact, so it was easy to stay angry at him. I saw him as guilty of doing something to me, and I couldn't seem to forgive him. At that time, I couldn't see how I was imprisoning myself with this mindset. Still working on my fourth step with no luck resolving this issue, I decided to stop looking at my relationship with my father and to explore the anger toward my own family situation. I have two children and I was angry with their mother because our relationship had failed. As I began looking with honesty as my part in what had happened, I realized that I had done exactly the same thing to my family that my father had done to his. What I did with no malice or intent to harm anyone. My wife and I were fighting each other on every issue and at every level. I left my wife alone to raise the children as I was trying to clean up the financial disaster I had created and continue to create daily. I was losing my business and my properties, continued to rob Peter to pay Paul. My home was already gone, and I was losing my ability to control my emotions. I know beyond any doubt, I was doing the absolute best that I could do at that time. I'm sure our families and friends must have thought that I didn't care about my family. This definitely was not the case. I loved them very much, but my whole life was falling apart. I abandoned my family, not understanding the impact of what I was doing. My thoughts was, at least my children have one parent looking after them. When I saw all this, I realized that my father's situation was no different from mine. My father was an alcoholic, operating and living in insanity just as I was. When I became aware of this fact, I immediately saw him in a different light. I understood his position rather than only mine. I had gone for 30 years of my life trying to get people to understand me. And here was a different formula. If I could understand others, I could release myself from resentment and truly forgive what had occurred. Out of this new perspective, I no longer saw my father as guilty of doing anything to me. My resentment dissolved, never to return. After this experience, I was able to sit down and write my father a letter from a new and clear reality. I told him how proud of him I was for his staying sober, and I hope I could follow his example of recovery. Today, I have a great relationship with this man. We go to meetings together when he is in town. A wonderful healing has taken place in our lives. There has been other healings in my recovery. Like a blanket of forgiveness spread over my life, I am able to see many other situations more clearly. I am beginning to come to peace within myself through forgiving others. I owe all this to AA. A friend asked me a couple of years ago if I had any guilt about what happened in my family. My answer is no. I was doing the best I knew how with what I had to work with. I believe the reason is simple. When I left my father off the hook, I let myself off the hook at the same time. By what measure I judge others, I judge myself. By what measures I forgive others, I forgive myself. Una más, por favor, I would tell the bartender. One more, please. This story is called An Eve Toward Conversation. Excuse me, conservation. Conservation. An Eye Toward Conservation. This is by Ernie S. from York, M.E. Okay, with the national economy in decline, I am looking and listening more carefully to some of the requests for financial responsibility coming from the AA service boards. Escalating rent, printing, mailing, and transportation costs, rising taxes, and increased use of services are reasons cited by the AA program to sanction requests for more money. This comes at a time when most wages are frozen, the value of money is declining, and many people are without income altogether. During business meetings and discussions of our seven tradition, I heard members propose $2 donations and suggest that the well-heeled among us might come up with a 5 or 10, maybe even write a check now and then. Anonymously, of course, to balance the books. The message is always single track. AA needs more money to carry the message. In other words, we don't have enough. We need more. Never have I heard anyone suggest that AA need to evaluate the ways it is spending the voluntary contributions of its members with an eye toward conserving this limited resource. Alcoholics seem able to conceive of ever more grandiose ways to carry the message to every corner of the world with these schemes predicated on other people in the membership, picking up the tab. This strikes a clear resonance with the rehab of a bunch of AAs once opened in Middletown that we read about in Tradition 4. One of the lessons of that chapter of AA history was that too many drunks were focused entirely on sobering up other drunks and ignored proper care of their own sobriety. The intentions were good, but the means were not suited to people addicted to ego-feeding propositions. And after the fact request from our group's GSR to repay his expenses for attending the Northeast Regional Forum brought the question sharply into focus for my group. Of the 212, it cost him to attend a 2.5-day conference. Of 150 went to the hotel hosting the event. It took our group 8 to 10 weeks to raise that amount of money from our contributions, and ours is one of the better off meetings in one of the country's poorest states. So we have to seriously question whose sobriety is served by our paying $150 to a hotel. As a rule, we would be donating portions of that money to the local phone service, the state central office service, the district, and GSO in New York. Our group's limited funds force us to make a choice. Where do we put our money? Returning from the large regional events staged by upper-level service boards, sober AAs carry a visible glow, acquiring in contact with other hopeful, far-sighted, sober people like themselves. But I have yet to hear a report about one of those events that has changed the way a meeting operates or that has done anything for a newcomer other than create more confusion for him or her. Even when we can't meet our rent on time, the AA message is carried at the local meetings from one alcoholic to another, not through regional conferences, state conventions, national gatherings, not through projects enabling overseas populations to develop programs that are supposed to be self-supporting, and certainly not through renting rooms from hotel chains to ensure the comfort of our trusted servants. All those big events do contribute to carry the message of AA, but with the present squeeze for funding getting tighter, I will vote every time for keeping the money at home, in the local group, and the state central service office, where the resources is conserved and meted out in small, concrete, countable ways. My vote goes to local use, where one alcoholic can shake the hand of another, sit down and share experience, strength, and hope. That's what I call putting money where my mouth is. Ha ha ha. Ernie S. from York, Minnesota, or Montana, or Menifee, I don't know. Ernie S. York. Thank you so much, Ernie. Now, the AA Grapevine, founded in 1944, is the International Monthly Journal of Alcoholics Anonymous and published the individual experiences, strength, and hope of AA members and others interested in the AA fellowship. Widely known as a meeting in print, the Grapevine communicates the thoughts and feelings of its contributors and reflects current AA experience with recovery, unity, and service. Articles are not intended as statements of AA policy, nor does publication imply any endorsement by either AA or the Grapevine. The Grapevine is self-supporting through subscriptions and other sales incomes and does not accept group contributions. What? Articles are invited, although no payment can be made, nor can material be returned. I think it's aagrapevine.org. It's easy to find. Anyway, it would behoove us to get our subscription going again, or give out subscriptions to people we know will enjoy them. I like to get the Spanish Viña so I can give it to my Spanish people. I used to have it as people would ask me. I said, what do you want for Christmas? I want an AA Grapevine subscription, please. Oh, they'd be so happy. You know, they don't have to dish out $150 like their present. Or the Viña, and I would get it. People, well, I'll give you both. Isn't that awesome? They haven't asked me for a present lately. I got to grow up. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to me to read today from the October 1992 Grapevine. The Family Afterwards is the article. I love you. God bless you. No one told you they love you. I love you and I care. Let's pray the Our Father, please. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back, family. It's definitely working. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's meeting. I'm Fernando, your host, alcoholic. Let's go ahead and open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, we have a little quick story here. It's called The Changing of One Small Heart. It says, Mom, can you take me and Andy to the tennis courts on the way to school tonight? Mom, can you drop me off at Scott's? It's on the way to the courts. Mom, can Jason spend the night since the other boys won't be home? You could pick him up on the way home from school. Mom, are you taking the car tonight? I would really like to trade cars because your tires have air and mine don't. And I'm driving a lot further than you are tonight. Honey, you're out of milk. Could you stop on the way from school and pick up a gallon? This is my world today. I have a typical family of four children from my three different marriages. I am miraculously participating in a 10-year-long marriage to a man who used to drop his trousers at bars and sleep in his car. 7 years ago, we were headed for disaster with a life that was literally with alcohol and drug abuse, child and spouse abuse, police intervention, general chaos. I hated myself, everyone who was within a relationship distance. I couldn't hold on a job and live on welfare. Today, it would be hard to pick us out from the other families on our suburban street. Today, I teach at a local library at art college, and I'm close to finish up a PhD in psychology. My family is a miracle to me. The world is a nasty place for a woman who destroyed everything she touches. Parenthood was simply an excuse to continue breathing. How lonely the dark nights and early mornings could be when they were spent with drunken strangers who told lies bigger than my own. I lived this life. I sought out this life. It was safe because I felt comfortable in a world that demanded little more than drunken participation. Approaching 30 years of age, I knew the dance of the living dead. God, in infinite wisdom, decided I needed a taste of something fine and real and unconditional accepting to bring meaning to my life. I met Hope face to face in an AA hall. I believe that heaven and earth stopped for a moment and observed the changing of one small heart. I found a moment of peace in an otherwise unmanageable life, and I cried out for help. I found my help at regular AA meetings, and by diligently seeking my higher power via the 12 steps explained to me by patient AA members and a very tolerant sponsor. It has not been easy, and it has not been begonias bundled with ribbons. I remember the changes I tried to make in the beginning and how hard they were. The substance abuse was the first change to be made, followed by changes in relationship behavior and perceptions of the world. I remember one particularly difficult segment of time, a day. Anxiety and depression covered me in a blanket of steel. My sponsor said to keep busy, to achieve small tasks, and to enjoy each breath I took. I decided to move a stack of wood that day from the driveway into the garage where it will stay dry and be easier to get at. It was late winter and a swirl of snowflakes swept over the icy drive. I welcomed the cold. It was a feeling of vibrant feeling and held me above the drudgery of depression. I wrapped up warm and forcefully began moving the pile of wood as if it would somehow change my life. I started carrying three or four pieces at a time, scraping my hands and my neck, carrying the load too high. I rushed, I hurried, I was desperate. The task seemed insurmountable. The wood was heavy, and eventually I was forced to carry only a piece at a time. I had to stop and rest when I got tired. It was hard work for a small woman. I wanted to quit, but I didn't. I began to see that somehow I could do it. I prayed to the Almighty, and my spirits were bolstered. I breathe slowly and intently and focus on the task at hand. My thoughts wandered, but they quit racing. Piece by piece, moment by moment, the pile inside the garage grew higher and higher. This job could be done. It will be done. I could see the finished product taking shape, and I was beginning to feel good about myself. My arms ached, but there was joy in this pain. Then I found that toward the bottom of the heap, the pieces of rough wood were frozen together. I struggled. I kicked at the pieces and scraped them with my gloves. I got some of the pieces, but a few on the very bottom were immovable. How could this be? I was giving it all I had. I was outraged. I was sinking. Tears came fast and furious, leaving raw spots on my cheeks where I rubbed at them with my gloves. I sank into a heap on the cold driveway. I was cold and tired. I couldn't do it anymore. I turned my head around to see my husband walking toward me in his robe and slippers. He had a fireplace poker in his hand and began chipping away at the ice. His blue robe was not protecting him from the wind, and he looked pretty comical. He moved the last few pieces of wood into the garage and then turned and gathered me in his arms. "You don't have to do it all by yourself," he whispered. "I didn't know that," I sobbed back. He went back into the house. I got an old broom and swept away the pieces of remaining bark which littered the driveway. The wind gathered loose scraps and took them away. Some pieces just swirled around me, and I decided to leave them swirling. A few shards were sunk in ice and would have to wait for a warmer day. I went into the house for a cup of hot cocoa and to snuggle into a pair of slippers. That's how my pile of wood moved from the driveway to the garage, and it's the same way that I have watched miracles happen in my sobriety. Miracles of love, miracles around me, and life which daily astound me. I work hard to do what is in front of me to do, asking for the guidance of my higher power and help from others when necessary. I feel pain and I feel pleasure. I know joy and heartache. I am alive and I am a sober human being. Thanks to my higher power and the fellowship of AA, I certainly am. Carla D. from Parksville, Montana. This was October 1992, Grapevine. All right. The Changing of One Small Heart is the name of the title of the article, and that's from our beloved Grapevine. I told you before, I have a neon sign that says, "Expect a miracle." And it's funny, a lot of people say, "Don't expect anything," or something in that nature. But I was in a meeting, a Midtown meeting, in beautiful downtown Stockton, California. And they had a sign, a cardboard sign, that must have been up on the wall, I estimated, at least 20 years. Once they decided to paint the place, they took the cardboard sign off and left the beautiful, bright color of the original paint in the wall. And you know what it said? It said, "Expect a miracle." So while the guy was sharing, or the secretary was announcing, people would look up to the left and see that cardboard inscription. It was pretty big. It was at least by 1.5 by 1.5 and written in the marker. "Expect a miracle." Everybody loved it so much, they left it up there for years and years. You know why? That's why. I walked out the bathroom this morning and I looked up and there's the sign again. But this time I have a neon sign. It's a restaurant sign. You can turn it on and it lights up. It's "Expect a miracle." And then my mind, it actually hits 90% of my mind. my subconscious mind starts thinking about that, starts trying how it can bring scenarios of miracles about. So I'm actually hypnotizing myself with that. Expect a miracle. A miracle only happens in God's category, in God's heaven. That's God's division. That's His division. It's out of my division. I have nothing to do with that. All I do is I put in the request. Every day I come out of the restroom, expect a miracle, expect a miracle. I start thinking in terms of miracles. How about that? I got that in an AA program, folks. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, let's go. Mary Friend B from Morrison, New Jersey sends us a letter. She says, in the same year, October 1992, my family was a large one, full of many aunts, uncles, and cousins, making holidays and celebrations large and festive. However, there was a big blow-up over something trivial, and suddenly it all fell apart. The death of my grandfather was the first time the family would all be together in one room since the blow-up. In anticipation of the emotional outburst I knew would occur, I got drunk before the funeral. I rationalized that my grandfather would want me to be that way for his funeral. We had so much in common. My grandfather died drunk. The death of my grandmother came a year and a half later. We were all brought back together again in the same funeral parlor. Once again, animosity filled the air. And once again, I was in my typical frame of mind, stewing, smelling. To deal with the circumstances, the scenario was similar to the Hatfields and the McCoys. All this time, I tried to be the glue that would keep the family together. In the meantime, getting ripped apart myself. This went on for years. It continued into my recovery. When I got sober, I put getting the family back together on the top of my things to do list. It is just recently, in fact, in the last few days, that I have decided this no longer belongs on my list. If God, as I understand Him, can fix my family, I certainly can't either. It hurts unmercifully to see resentment fester in such a huge family, with no two members talking to each other. But the beauty of it, that I have removed myself from the pain, I have gotten great relief from our two AA slogans, live and let live, and let go and let God. I no longer feel responsible. This is a huge burden lifted from my shoulders. My recovery can now take another turn. I love each and every member of my family dearly, but I accept that we all can't be in the same place at the same time, at least not for today. I believe I have now decided to let all of AA's into my life. So many times I have heard people say that AA became their family, and I couldn't identify with that. I have been active in service all of this time, but there was still that small emptiness that would appear now and then. I think I have found what that was. I needed to let all of AA's into my life. The young people, the bleeding deacons, the elder statements, and most importantly, the newcomer. They are always there to listen and to tell me what I need to hear and not what I want to hear. Without their help, I wouldn't be where I am today to share another one of those promises which has come true for me. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Thanks to my AA family, Mary Fran B., Morrison, New Jersey. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Pretty cool, huh? You know, I was thinking about my family, Fernando Alcoholic, and when my mom passed away, Hatfields and McCoys. But, you know, emotions run. But because I've been in AA for a while, we were able to sing songs as she was passing away, me and the wife. We just sat there and we kind of ushered the family into singing with us and bringing an atmosphere of celebration and praise and worship as she passed away 2-3 in the morning. Bless my mama. Hallelujah. And today we had to eat crow, me and the younger sister. I just keep thanking God for them. Keep thanking you, God, for years and years. And finally, it broke. Finally, the dam busted and the love came, the forgiveness and the hugs. Today, it seems like we never went through it. Everybody's happy and loving and kind. And we all know what to do. We all know what to do. To forgive and embrace. That's what we do. I'm not telling you what to do, but eating crow is just real quick. It's like taking medicine. A little bit of sugar, it makes it go down. Oh, check this out. Our next story, or one of the stories, is called A Blanket of Forgiveness. This is by Rick B. from Minneapolis, Minnesota. A Blanket of Forgiveness. Minneapolis. I know, I'm a foreigner. All right, let's go ahead and get the story going. You gotta excuse the thunder in the background. It's trash day. You'll never come back. Upon entering AA at the ripe old age of 35, having lost my family, my business, and my home, I knew I had to resolve my conflicts or go mad. I realized I would find no peace in this program unless I was willing to change. So I set out to do a fourth step. I used the inventory on pages 64 and 65 of the big book, with amazing results. Whenever I've been willing to be honest about my past experiences, I have been able to see that I set the ball rolling on every one. It wasn't hard to stay angry when I found I was about 95% responsible for the problems. And I could see this when I wrote them out and let them go. With the exception of one, my problem with my father, it is the experience I would like to share. I am the youngest of five children. My father was an active alcoholic all through my early childhood. He sobered up in AA when I was 11 and never drank again. My mother, also an alcoholic, but better able at this time to maintain her drinking, divorced my father. She never got involved in either Al-Anon or AA and went on to marry another alcoholic. She committed suicide on my 15th birthday. During these years, I was raised mostly by my older sister. Without much discipline in my life, not only was I in trouble a great deal of the time in school, but also with the law. Back in those years, most people felt sorry for me because of my family situation, and I used that fact to every advantage I could. I now see how I blame my father for everything that happened in my family. I blame him for my mother's death and for every problem I had. He was a scapegoat for everyone in the family. Society reinforced this fact, so it was easy to stay angry at him. I saw him as guilty of doing something to me, and I couldn't seem to forgive him. At that time, I couldn't see how I was imprisoning myself with this mindset. Still working on my fourth step with no luck resolving this issue, I decided to stop looking at my relationship with my father and to explore the anger toward my own family situation. I have two children and I was angry with their mother because our relationship had failed. As I began looking with honesty as my part in what had happened, I realized that I had done exactly the same thing to my family that my father had done to his. What I did with no malice or intent to harm anyone. My wife and I were fighting each other on every issue and at every level. I left my wife alone to raise the children as I was trying to clean up the financial disaster I had created and continue to create daily. I was losing my business and my properties, continue to rob Peter to pay Paul. My home was already gone and I was losing my ability to control my emotions. I know beyond any doubt, I was doing the absolute best that I could do at that time. I'm sure our families and friends must have thought that I didn't care about my family. This definitely was not the case. I loved them very much, but my whole life was falling apart. I abandoned my family, not understanding the impact of what I was doing. My thoughts was, at least my children have one parent looking after them. When I saw all this, I realized that my father's situation was no different from mine. My father was an alcoholic, operating and living in insanity just as I was. When I became aware of this fact, I immediately saw him in a different light. I understood his position rather than only mine. I had gone for 30 years of my life trying to get people to understand me. And here was a different formula. If I could understand others, I could release myself from resentment and truly forgive what had occurred. Out of this new perspective, I no longer saw my father as guilty of doing anything to me. My resentment dissolved, never to return. After this experience, I was able to sit down and write my father a letter from a new and clear reality. I told him how proud of him I was for his staying sober, and I hope I could follow his example of recovery. Today, I have a great relationship with this man. We go to meetings together when he is in town. A wonderful healing has taken place in our lives. There has been other healings in my recovery. Like a blanket of forgiveness spread over my life, I am able to see many other situations more clearly. I am beginning to come to peace within myself through forgiving others. I owe all this to AA. A friend asked me a couple of years ago if I had any guilt about what happened in my family. My answer is no. I was doing the best I knew how with what I had to work with. I believe the reason is simple. When I left my father off the hook, I let myself off the hook at the same time. By what measure I judge others, I judge myself. By what measures I forgive others, I forgive myself. Una más, por favor, I would tell the bartender. One more, please. This story is called An Eve Toward Conversation. Excuse me, conservation. An eye toward conservation. This is by Ernie S. from York, M.E. Okay, with the national economy in decline, I am looking and listening more carefully to some of the requests for financial responsibility coming from the AA service boards. Escalating rent, printing, mailing, and transportation costs, rising taxes, and increased use of services are reasons cited by the AA program to sanction requests for more money. This comes at a time when most wages are frozen, the value of money is declining, and many people are without income altogether. During business meetings and discussions of our seven tradition, I heard members propose $2 donations and suggest that the well-heeled among us might come up with a 5 or 10, maybe even write a check now and then. Anonymously, of course, to balance the books. The message is always single track. AA needs more money to carry the message. In other words, we don't have enough. We need more. Never have I heard anyone suggest that AA need to evaluate the ways it is spending the voluntary contributions of its members with an eye toward conserving this limited resource. Alcoholics seem able to conceive of ever more grandiose ways to carry the message to every corner of the world with these schemes predicated on other people in the membership, picking up the tab. This strikes a clear resonance with the rehab of a bunch of AAs once opened in Middletown that we read about in Tradition 4. One of the lessons of that chapter of AA history was that too many drunks were focused entirely on sobering up other drunks and ignore proper care of their own sobriety. The intentions were good, but the means were not suited to people addicted to ego-feeding propositions. And after the fact request from our group's GSR to repay his expenses for attending, the Northeast Regional Forum brought the question sharply into focus for my group. Of the 212 it cost him to attend the 2.5-day conference, 150 went to the hotel hosting the event. It took our group 8 to 10 weeks to raise that amount of money from our contributions, and ours is one of the better off meetings in one of the country's poorest states. So we have to seriously question whose sobriety is served by our paying $150 to a hotel. As a rule, we would be donating portions of that money to the local phone service, the state central office service, the district, and GSO in New York. Our group's limited funds force us to make a choice. Where do we put our money? Returning from the large regional events staged by upper-level service boards, sober AAs carry a visible glow, acquiring in contact with other hopeful, far-sighted, sober people like themselves. But I have yet to hear a report about one of those events that has changed the way a meeting operates or that has done anything for a newcomer other than create more confusion for him or her. Even when we can't meet our rent on time, the AA message is carried at the local meetings from one alcoholic to another, not through regional conferences, state conventions, national gatherings, not through projects enabling overseas populations to develop programs that are supposed to be self-supporting, and certainly not through renting rooms from hotel chains to ensure the comfort of our trusted servants. All those big events do contribute to carry the message of AA, but with the present squeeze for funding getting tighter, I will vote every time for keeping the money at home, in the local group, and the state central service office, where the resources is conserved and meted out in small, concrete, countable ways. My vote goes to local use, where one alcoholic can shake the hand of another, sit down and share experience, strength, and hope. That's what I call putting money where my mouth is. Ha ha ha. Ernie S. from York, Minnesota, or Montana, or Menifee. I don't know. Ernie S. York. Thank you so much, Ernie. Now, the AA Grapevine, founded in 1944, is the International Monthly Journal of Alcoholic Anonymous and published the individual experiences, strength, and hope of AA members and others interested in the AA fellowship. Widely known as a meeting in print, the Grapevine communicates the thoughts and feelings of its contributors and reflects current AA experience with recovery, unity, and service. Articles are not intended as statements of AA policy, nor does publication imply any endorsement by either AA or the Grapevine. The Grapevine is self-supporting through subscriptions and other sales incomes and does not accept group contributions. What? Articles are invited, although no payment can be made, nor can material be returned. I think it's aagrapevine.org. It's easy to find. Anyway, it would behoove us to get our subscription going again, or give out subscriptions to people we know will enjoy them. I'd like to get the Spanish Viña so I can give it to my Spanish people. I used to have it as people would ask me. I said, "What do you want for Christmas?" I want an AA Grapevine subscription, please. Oh, they'd be so happy. You know, they don't have to dish out $150 like their present. Or the Viña, and I would get it. People, well, I'll give you both. Isn't that awesome? They haven't asked me for a present lately. I got to grow up. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to me to read today from the October 1992 Grapevine. The Family Afterwards is the article. I love you. God bless you. No one told you they love you. I love you, and I care. Let's pray the Our Father, please. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back, family. It's definitely working.